And we are here at News Talk 1590 at KVTA. Dr. Levin, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing?
You know, we're doing well. Everything is good here. And Rich is going to be asking you some questions. So those are your headphones so you can hear Rich. He's in the he's four panes of glass away, right behind us. And you'll be able to hear him. And we also have some callers that are going to be asking questions, too. Yeah, I saw you speaking with the county. I saw that stream online. That was great information. But we wanted to get you in here so we could have a long-form conversation with not only our audience, but with Rich Galano. We're doing our best here. The guidance is to spray, wipe, wash, clean, constantly do everything we can, have this separation. And, I think as a company, Gold Coast Broadcasting jumped on this very, very early following the guidelines, and we're hoping that everybody else is doing that too.
It's important, and you're setting an example of responsibility, and we really appreciate it.
It's about time.
Yeah.
Well, finally, got a little responsible here and a little responsibility. Rich, can I go to one phone call first?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Let's just formally introduce Dr. Levin. This is Dr. Robert Levin. He's Ventura County's health officer, public health officer. He is, as Michael Jackson would say, the man in the middle. He is in the midst of a major situation going on right now, trying to coordinate for us the effort to we're talking about stemming the increase or slowing the increase of the coronavirus at this point. And I'll let you go with that first question then.
All right. And caller, what's your name, please?
Oh, my name's Kathy.
And Kathy, what question do you have for the doctor?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Dr. Levin for coming in and communicating with us and keeping us on the forefront of all the information. Very vital. And also for you folks at KVTA that are keeping the lines of communication open, because that's what's going to keep us safe and sane. I'm concerned about the food supply, the sources of the food coming in. Can the virus attach to produce or cans or boxes? I mean, they say it lives on surfaces. So now do we have to be vigilant about the food that we're bringing into our homes?
It is felt that the virus can survive for a few hours to a few days on surfaces, depending on what the surfaces are. But when you bring food into your home, it can go one pathway, be cooked, and that's going to make a big difference. I mean, that's going to kill off the virus. And the other direction for fresh produce, it can be rinsed off, it can be washed off, and that's going to get rid of the virus. So I think food is pretty safe. I wouldn't worry about it. I'm not worrying about it in my own home.
Okay, now, Rich?
Yeah, we want to go over just a little bit of the order that you issued yesterday based on the local emergency regarding what people can do, what they can't do, what businesses will stay open, what businesses will close. But let's start with the most vulnerable population that appears to be, based on this order, people over the age of 70. What's the situation for them starting today through the end of the month?
The governor a few days ago said that anybody recommended that anybody over the age of 65 stay home. And it was just a recommendation. I felt that, you know, for our county, and just based on what I've been seeing about this, clearly the most vulnerable population, the people we need to protect the most, are the elderly. Second group, of course, are people who have medical problems, and especially unstable medical problems. If you've got high blood pressure, but you're taking your medication and you're seeing your doctor and your blood pressure is stable, I don't think you're in the same group as a person whose blood pressure is unstable. And the same goes for your diabetes. It has everything to do with your stage of cancer as well. If you had cancer 2-3 years ago and you've got things under control now, I think you're in a whole lot better shape. So, but just looking at the old people first, if you're 75 years of age, just statistically, even if you're healthy, statistically, you're more likely to have a problem with this virus. So I say 75 and over, you should stay in. If you're 70 to 75 and you've got a comorbidity, which is to say another underlying disease, the kind we just talked about, that jacks up your risks as well. So I think someone like that should stay in. And then from 65 on up, you can just follow the governor's initial guidelines.
Now, we're not talking about locking these people in their homes. We want them to stay home as much as possible, but they can leave to do certain things. And what are those things? And if they leave, what should the, how should they act or deal with the situation?
Rich, I'm so glad you asked that question because it wasn't explicitly spelled out in the order. So it's important that we explain it around the order at times like this. And that is, just because you're confined to your home, it doesn't mean you're confined to your home. It means you can go outside. We don't want you to socialize. We don't want you to get into group gatherings, but you can take your morning walk if you're feeling healthy enough to do that. You can work in the garden and around the house. And all those things are not only not bad for you, they're good for you. We want you to do that. You need to keep exercising. You should stay in touch with other people, Skype, over the phone. Just continue to live your life.
Now, if you you need to go to the doctor or you want to go to the grocery store, things like that, you're able to do that. But again, you want to adhere to social distancing rules, right?
You do, and we would rather have you not go to the grocery store if you're 70 or 75 in one of those situations, and because hopefully you've got someone who can do that for you. I'd rather you confine yourself to activities outside and around the home, immediately around the home when you're outdoors, or on a walk. You know, I live in Ojai. You can walk for 2-3 miles and not run into somebody up on those streets outside of downtown. And a lot of Ventura County is just like that. So you can do that.
Now, but for a lot of older folks, you know, many older folks in our society already feel isolated in many ways. And this doesn't help very much in that regard. So I think people need to realize why this is happening and not feel that they are being singled out because we're afraid of them, but to protect them, basically, right?
Well, you know, overall, this virus is obviously more dangerous than the flu. It has a fatality rate that's higher than the flu. It's not spread evenly across all ages and all health conditions. So the worst fatality rate we're seeing is among the oldest people in our culture and in our county, and we want to protect those people. So we've made a rule about extended care facilities where we see a lot of elderly to take stronger steps. And what I personally would encourage is no visitation to those at all. And employees need to have themselves screened with a temperature taken to make sure they don't have a fever, and symptoms taken every day when they come in to work, at least once a day, maybe during the day as well.
Now let's talk about one other part of the order. Do you have a call, Spencer? Is it?
Yeah, I'm trying to get.
Okay. We'll talk about this other part of the order. It has to do with the restaurants and other gathering places. As I read this order, pretty much any place where you're going to have people gather should be shut down, with the exception of restaurants, and even there, they're limited in what they can do. Am I basically correct in that?
Restaurants should not have customers anymore that can sit there. They can deliver, and they can have pickup.
And bars who serve food can do the same thing, but they have to abide by the same rules as a restaurant would, correct?
Bars that serve food fit under the restaurant guidelines, yes.
But we're talking about movie theaters shutting down, live performances, bowling alleys, anything like that is just going to be gyms, fitness centers, wineries, breweries, etc. And these are places where younger or healthier people might be, but it's still at this point going to be off limits for everyone.
Right. And breweries themselves obviously can continue to make beer, but they can't have guests. They can't have customers there and sell it on site that way. They can act like a liquor store and sell beer bulk for people who come by.
Now, this order went into effect today, and it's going to run through the end of the month at least. Would be lifted April 1st, but that may not be the case. It could go longer than that?
It could go longer than that, yes.
And one other thing, and an issue that's come up before, is testing. What should people do, and define different people by perfectly healthy people, people who might have the sniffles or a cough, people that might be clearly having maybe two or three of the symptoms that we associate with the coronavirus. In terms of testing, what should people do?
It's gotten to be more liberalized, and it's gotten to be pretty simple. And that is, if you are ill and you speak with your provider, and your provider, physician, nurse practitioner, and they believe that you should have testing, and they're willing to say you should have testing, then you can have your specimen sent off, collected and sent off.
Well, where do you collect it? Because I've talked to a lot of private doctors, and they say they can't handle this in terms of doing the initial collection of samples. Where do people go to have this done?
Well, there are many private doctors who do this in their office. Perhaps they designate someone to do it. But if they don't, they can arrange with one of the other sites around the county, and I think there's like 12 of them that are drive-through or drive-up places to be tested. And so a doctor can hopefully work things out with one of those sites to have his or her patient seen.
Are those locations listed anywhere?
I don't know, but they should be. The reason they listing them is not necessarily, you know, helpful is because you just can't go there. You just can't drive up and say, I want to be tested. You've got to see your doctor, and your doctor's got to decide that your symptoms are likely to produce a positive result, or at least are in the running, and then send you to the place that they have an arrangement with. You might pick a place that's near your house, but that your doctor doesn't have an arrangement with.
So if like Quest or something like that, your doctor would have to make a referral for you to go over there to get a test done, right?
Your doctor has to look at your symptoms and decide this is worthy of testing.
If you're perfectly healthy, should you just not do the test? A lot of people want to go have a test done, even though they're perfectly healthy, feel fine.
You should not have a test done if you're perfectly healthy. It can be falsely reassuring. You could be negative and then positive the next day. It doesn't really make any good sense. You know, the president said we're going to have something like 5 million tests at the end of this week, and that should be enough. Look at how many people we've got in our country. We've got 330 million. That's a little over 1% of the testing capacity for our nation. So I don't think that it makes sense for healthy people to get tested.
And one last thing, we're going to go to some questions here too in a moment. The bottom line here is not necessarily at this point, all this is not happening to stop the virus. It's to slow the rate of increase to keep it manageable. Am I right in that?
Yeah, we cannot stop this virus. We can't make it completely stop like we did with SARS. This is just to slow it. So unchecked, you could see mounting amounts of virus over the coming days, and it would reach a peak naturally, and then it would fall naturally. What we're hoping these steps will do will make that peak a smaller, lower hump.
Spence, you have some calls or questions?
Yes, we do. On the line, we have Douglas Fairweather, and Douglas Fairweather is of Fairweather Air Conditioning and Heating Services for the people who do in-home types of services. Doug, what is your question for the doctor?
Good morning, sir. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for everything you do for the county.
And Doug,
yes, sir.
Thank you for putting a new heater in my home a week or two ago.
Oh, you're very welcome, sir. Thank you so much. We appreciate the work, and we enjoy, you know, helping out the community. But here's my main question. as a service provider, whether I'm a heater, you know, heating and air conditioning or plumbing, how do I go from house to house on each service call without trying to infect the next person with the previous call? Because we try to limit ourselves by having masks and you know, gloves and stuff like that. But, you know, we go into people's houses that are in their 80s and 90 years old. How do I honestly feel like I'm not bringing something into their house from the next call?
All right. That's really a very responsible question. But I got to say, I'm not surprised, because people across the county are being thoughtful and responsible in the same way. But thank you for that question. I think the best thing you can do, the best single thing you can do, is that if you have an employee who is feeling ill, maybe feeling ill or is feeling ill, don't let them work. Because those are the people that are likely to transmit the disease, to bring it into the homes of another person. If you've got someone who has no symptoms, it's very unlikely that they're going to transmit this disease.
So at a minimum, what would you say that we should do for every call? I mean, I could easily go to the extreme and, you know, have, you know, coveralls and stuff like that. But what would you say the minimum we should do for every single call?
I think you should screen your employees. You could screen them on arrival every day in the morning with asking them symptoms and asking and taking their temperature. And if one of those scans across the forehead is 100.5 degrees or higher, don't let them work. If they're developing symptoms, especially cough or shortness of breath, please don't let them work. And that is, I think, the single most important thing you can do.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate everything you do and your continued support of the county, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Levin, as of this morning, I'm looking at the very good website for information about all this is vcemergency.com. If you want to go there, we have a link to that on our website, too. It's got a lot of information. As of this morning, they're showing, as of yesterday morning, 9 presumptive positive cases. That's where local tests have shown positive and the CDC must confirm. And then the 1 original case where both the CDC and the local test have confirmed. First of all, are those numbers up to date?
Well, right now we are saying, as of last night, that we have 11 cases, a mix of confirmed and presumptive. We have 3 travel-related cases, 1 person-to-person spread cases. Now we have 5 community transmission cases. It is possible that we'll learn something more about one of those cases that'll make us think that it doesn't fit in that category, but now we've crossed the border into community transmission, and we have 2 cases that are under investigation for a total of 11.
Now, do you have any guesstimate as to where those numbers might go as we go into the coming weeks? Are they going to get much higher, or will they stay relatively low, or what?
I hope they stay low, but I think they're going to go higher.
We have another call on the phone line. Interesting call on community issues. And one, is this Tommy T with the public swimming?
It is. Good morning, Spence. How are you?
Doing great. The doctor's with you right now, Dr. Levin.
All right, Dr. Levin, first of all, thanks for participating in the inoculation. And I get my shot every year down at the station for the flu virus thing that you support. So getting on with it, there's a group of us that regularly work out at the Aquatic Center, which is the swimming center at Kemble Park. They've closed the pool. In general discussion, we decided that chlorine may kill this virus, and those of us that swim 5-6 days a week, what's your take on that program?
You know, I honestly don't know about chlorine. I know that a lot of the common cleaning products will kill this virus. But taking a step over to a first cousin question about chlorine, I don't know. I'll have to look into it.
That would be great. And if you can give Spence that information and let the boys tell us all about it, KBTA is a great place to go.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
One of our many flu shot people, and Rich, we had another call earlier that wanted to ask, the flu shot we get has absolutely nothing to do with this, correct?
It does not. It is not protective against this virus. Is it worth getting the flu shot? Yeah, it is, because one, you don't need the flu to confuse things. Two, you don't need to get the flu, just be recovering from it and then get this, because your immunity's probably weakened a bit. And secondly, thirdly, you can get a couple of infections at the same time, so you wouldn't want to get the flu and this together.
We have another call that we want to go to here, and this is another just a great question. And I am going to David to talk about the parents that might not take guidance from their kids. David, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great. You have the doctor, Dr. Levin, on the line with you.
Hello, doctor. Thank you very much for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning. My parents are having a hard time dealing with this. They're 87 years old, and they have other issues. But the question of whether or not they should go out and get, like, the mail and wear gloves or get the newspaper in the morning, I mean, I'm not touching it anymore. But I'm wondering, that they're having a hard time accepting the idea of having to protect themselves. I'm wondering if you could speak to that.
Well, I think they need to be concerned about protecting themselves because they're at such high risk if they were to get this disease. On the other hand, I think getting out, if they're accustomed to doing it, and walking down to get the mail or any other outdoor activity is really good for them. If they go get the mail and you're concerned, I think maybe you should focus on making sure they wash their hands when they get back in the house. But I'm just not that concerned about mail and what might be on it. I think it's good for them to get out of the house.
Right. It wasn't so much the getting out. I mean, that's like a short walk. It was more about their interaction with people. They don't seem to grapple with the idea that it's they're being protected as opposed to them being somehow isolated, taking it personally, the idea that this is about them and not about a disease or a virus. I don't know if you have any thoughts about that for other people who are probably dealing with the same thing right now, because they're kind of confused, and it's hard to convince them that as to what's going on around them, that they can't see this. They can understand it by, you know, watching TV, but they couldn't understand a discussion like we're having right now.
Yeah, I think if, you know, some people are able to visualize things or understand things in different ways. I'm a graph person, and I think even when I'm 87, God willing, I make it that far, only if I'm healthy.
Mm-hmm.
People could show me a graph and say, look what happens to 20-year-olds with this virus. Look how low that bar is. And then look what happens to 85-year-olds with this virus. Look how high that death bar is. So you can try that kind of education. And to address the first part of your question, when they're out of the house, if they encounter other people, either with supervision, perhaps talking to the other people, maybe you can educate them. If they can stay 6 feet away from them, that would be great. But I got to say, outdoors, even if you're a little bit closer, outdoors is a lot safer than being indoors in terms of transmission of this disease.
Thank you very much for the call. We'll get back to Rich Galano. I want to hit one more person, another local businessman, and it's J.R. from Winchester's. J.R., good morning.
Good morning, guys.
You have
the
doctor.
All the great information you're getting out there.
Thank you. Did you do something on my house in the last week or two, too?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
So, JR, what was your question?
So the question I had, I fully understand the need for healthy people to not get tested because it's a finite supply of tests. However, for the most part, I'm not going to be working now. I'm thinking I'd like to go visit my parents. They're in their 70s. They live in a retirement community. I don't want to be the asymptomatic guy that brings, this into a retirement community. So, that's why in my mind, I'd kind of like to get tested. So what do you say for a situation like that?
Well, first of all, there's a very good chance. Well, they live in a retirement community, huh? They don't live in a retirement home.
Yeah, not a retirement home, no, just a retirement community, with the tennis courts and the golf course and all that bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that you can visit them. I think you can. And for the time being, you're quote unquote allowed to do that. We haven't had a shutdown like San Francisco where we would basically say, no, you got to stay home and they've got to stay home and you should interact over the phone. But I don't think if you feel that because of your parents' age and their risk, that even though we haven't taken that step, you shouldn't practice that. I think it might be better to interact with them in other ways other than being in person right now.
All right. Thank you very much, JR, for the call. Rich, let's jump back to a couple more questions from you, and then we'll get some more from our audience. It is 8:53, by the way. We only have about 6 minutes left.
Okay, and getting back to the testing situation, again, if a person doesn't have a primary care physician, a family doctor, what should they do? How should they proceed in that regard?
Go to an urgent care. Call first, but go to an urgent care if you need to be seen.
Okay. I know the county also has clinics. Those clinics are available for that, too, if you're someone who doesn't have a primary care physician.
I think clinics and doctors, many of them all over the county, a number of different clinic systems are looking for patients.
All right. And now the other thing, too, is that do not just show up at the emergency room, right? You don't want people, unless they're very, very sick, or what's the situation with that?
I mean, if you're having a heart attack, if you're having right lower quadrant abdominal pain, and it could be an appendicitis, you know, of course, go to the emergency room. If you're thinking, I'm wondering if what I've got represents COVID-19, you should call first.
And you don't call 911 unless you're very, very ill and need emergency care. There's 211, and you can maybe get some information that way, too, as well as the online sources.
211 is a very good thing to do, very good place to call, and they can triage you in one direction or another, depending on the problem you tell them about.
Doctor, I've seen some of the hacks, and I know you must love the internet for a lot of reasons and dislike it for some. And one of these was saying that the coronavirus will stay in your nasal passages, and that's where it kind of sits and waits. And the theory that I heard was that's the coolest part of your body, and it can live there because there's not the heat that kills it. The other thing I heard is it takes about 130 degrees to kill this virus. I saw one hack that literally said, take a blow dryer, like a hair dryer, and do a little inhale and up the nasal passages. Is that totally insane? Is there some science behind that?
I think it is. I want to be polite.
Okay.
And I just want to say it's slightly insane.
Slightly insane. Okay.
But,
just slightly.
But I do want to tell you this, that every virus, you might have seen pictures of this virus, but mm-hmm. any virus you see has these little projections on its surface, and those are the things that it uses. It's like landing stuff. It's where, you know, how it lands. And then those projections have an affinity. They like certain surfaces. It might be in a rat, and that's why rats have their own set of bugs. But in a human, the receptors for these little projections off of the virus, this COVID-19 virus, happen to be concentrated in the lungs. There are very few of them in the upper respiratory tract, and so that's why this disease attacks the lungs, because that's where this virus lands and sticks. So while you can find some up in the nasopharynx, even running 130-degree whatever it is up your nose is not going to get down to your lungs.
And a hot steam isn't effective enough. I've just seen a lot of these. Yeah. And the problem is people look at that and they think, hey, that cleared me. I got one more call, then we'll finish up with Rich. Nate, what was your question? Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing great. You have the doctor on KVTA right now.
Hi. How are you? So my question is I know that if you get the coronavirus, it lasts 2 weeks or something like that, but can you get it again?
We don't know much about this virus, but if it's like virtually every other virus known to man. No, you should have immunity to it once you get it.
Awesome. Thank you, Nate. Rich, I'm going to wrap up with you. Thank you very much for the calls. It is 8:57. We have 3 minutes.
All right. Give us a sense of your perspective on this from the standpoint of people. What we're dealing with now, the most difficult thing, the greatest infection, if you will, is fear of the unknown, not the virus itself, but our fear of the virus. How, as a medical professional, the guy in charge of kind of shepherding the county through this whole thing, how do you see it, and how should people see it? What should be their feelings about it?
You know, there's always a distinction between how you feel about something and how you feel other people should feel about it. Kind of do as I say, not as I do. I remember when I would be scared or worried about things as a kid, my father used to say to me, "Don't be afraid to live." And I thought that was pretty profound, even as a kid. So there are things that are threatening to us in our lives. Sometimes it's a virus. Sometimes it's weather. But we've got to go on living, and we need to make the best of it. The other thing that I've learned in public health over the years is the one thing that I can do and that we can do as the health department is, and what people are interested in when something new arises, is what can I do to protect myself and the ones I love? And it's pretty clear out there what you can do. And so I think those are the things you should do. We know about distancing. We know about not going to work if you're sick. We know about definitely honoring distancing if you run into someone who's sick. We know about cleaning surfaces and washing hands. So these are the kinds of things that you can do to protect yourself and the ones you love.
Dr. Robert Levin, Ventura County's public health officer, thank you for coming in this morning and sharing this time with us and answering questions and giving us some valuable information.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.